PNC Bank brings you Call of the Wild Money Moves. Shh, listen.
Hey, guys.
That's the sound of a multi-level marketing pitch.
This is life-changing, you guys.
Sounds like she wants you to buy lots of essential oils.
They are so essential.
And then have all your friends buy essential oils.
Are you more of a geranium or a lavender fan?
Don't look her in the eyes. Guard against wild money moves with PNC Bank. Brilliantly boring since 1865.
Labor Day deals are looking good at Lowe's. Save $10 on 1 gallon cans and $50 on 5 gallon pails of select interior paint via rebate. Plus, get two 2.5 quart or 3 quart Mums for just $8. A fresh look and savings? Even better. Labor Day deals are on now at Lowe's, in store and online. Valid through 9/9 while supplies last. Mum sizes vary by location and exclude Alaska and Hawaii. See store at Lowe's.com for more details.
So people are like, but Tim, you want the conspiracy theorists, but you don't like these conspiracy theories. And I've got great news for everybody. I found one that I like.
Hello, everyone. This is JVL here with my best friends, Sarah Longwell and Tim Miller of The Bulwark. We are together on a sad day for America, sad day for the world. We just literally 30 seconds before we sat down to tape, news broke that Dolly Parton, American icon and just a beautiful soul, beautiful human being, has passed at 80. I don't really have anything to say except that Dolly seems to have been a light everywhere she went. And so I am sad and will miss her. But Sarah, you had real thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, so I have maybe mentioned on the show, I'm a big country music person and always listened to country music and kind of grew up with Dolly Parton as somebody whose music I loved and listened to. The thing about Dolly Parton is she's one of those people who would kind of resurface in your life from time to time. So she, obviously her music when I was younger, she wrote the music for a movie called Transamerica. She won was nominated for an Oscar for, or won an Oscar for best original song. But that movie was at sort of the beginning of people thinking about trans people existing. And it was just this sort of story about a trans person and their life. And one of the things about Dolly Parton that I think is really notable is how much she affirmed everybody's basic humanity. That was sort of what she somehow managed to be. Something that we don't have, like, I'm trying to think, like Betty White, people who they're such.
Also dead.
What?
Also dead.
No, I know. I know. But yeah. People, I'm saying this is, she's sort of a last, there aren't a lot of people like this anymore, where they somehow managed to be mostly apolitical. She was sort of, that was something about Dolly Parton, is she often wanted to be thought of as apolitical. She didn't want to kind of wade into politics qua politics, but she did want to affirm people's basic dignity. She had lots of gay fans at a time when country music, you know, didn't attract tons of specifically like gay male fans. I think she's probably a favorite drag performance, somebody that people do. She does that movie. But also then when I had kids, and I don't know if your guys' kids do this, but she sent these books. She had used her wealth to send free books to any kid that wanted to sign up. And so she was this person who was inspiring about literacy. And so like she had all of these different, I don't know, ways that her life touched people over the course of the 80 years. There were not that many people like this where everybody felt like they could be a part of her and that she loved them back. And I think that is just a very unique thing. And I'm sorry that she has passed away.
A lot of Christian songs, was not sad about singing about Jesus, but did affirm people's dignity. This is, you know, she didn't want to get into politics. It became challenging to not get into politics when you affirm people's dignity. And, you know, the president of the United
States. That is a political act.
Yep. His essential being is to attack the dignity of other Americans. So, you know, but she managed to kind of navigate that And it is rare, like someone from kind of Red America, I mean, from like outside Pigeon Forge, Tennessee, to kind of navigate that without turning. It's important to have those kind of figures, you know, you'd think, to like not turn off the MAGAs and still kind of offer soft reminders of, you know, Jesus teaching and such. But no, she did. The gays did like her. My husband really should be on the podcast at this point. He walked down the aisle with his mother to Dolly. I've really got the feeling. It's another good Dolly. We like Baby I'm Burning in the house. It's another Dolly one that we play. It's more of an upbeat. And Toulouse would do, we went through a phase where I'd pick her up from school and we would do a Jolene series when the Beyonce Jolene cover came out. We did Beyonce Dolly and the White Stripes Jolene back to back to back, and she would decide which one she liked the best. And eventually you just come back to the OG as always. Eventually it ended up being like, you know, Dolly's was actually still the best. So those are my Dolly thoughts. RIP. My husband's going to be sad. There's going to be a lot of Dolly in my house this week.
Another great one by Dolly. I Will Always Love You. Here, fun fact. She wrote, you know, and it's the song that actually Whitney Houston made
in the movie. Yeah.
Right. From The Bodyguard. But I think my recollection is correct here that Dolly Parton wrote Jolene and I Will Always Love You on the same day. Like,
too good to check.
Too good to check. It's canon. R.I.P. Dolly. You're a real one.
May her memory be a blessing. Okay. So we're coming down south to Dolly's part of the world. Not quite to Dolly's part of the world. We're not doing Tennessee, but not hitting Pigeon Forge. But we are going to be in Columbia, South Carolina on October 16th, Charlotte, North Carolina on the 18th, and Atlanta, Georgia on the 20th. Go to thebulwark.com/events for tickets. Do it fast. These are smaller venues. They will sell out quickly. We're going to have everybody. We're going to have us. We're going to have Bill Kristol, okay. Andrew Agger, Will Sommer.
Sam.
Catherine Rampell.
Catherine Rampell. The whole extended universe is going to be there. So come. It will be fun. All right. Not fun. We're in another war. Not a shooting war. We're still in one of those in Iran. But we're now in a trade war with Canada. And it's not going great. We tried to push the Canadians around. And then this weekend, the Canadian Prime Minister broke off talks and walked out and gave a very powerful speech in which he said, we're not going to be bullied around. And we're a sovereign country and we're going to pursue our sovereign interests. And we recognize what America is. America is now a country where things are written in pencil, not in pen. Mark Carney is my president, leader of the free world. And, you know, our president has responded by claiming that he wants to rename Lake Ontario Lake America.
There you go. Do we have the White House? I don't know if you've seen this yet, Sarah. The White House put out a map today. This is an official communique from the White House.
So this map is what the White House put out. This is Legos? What they put out. This AI slop. AI Lego slop. Computer, enhance. Oh, Washington, D.C. is now in North Carolina. Great.
That's fascinating. Yeah, White House puts out a map renaming Lake Ontario, but puts Washington, D.C. in the wrong place. So I don't
genius.
Know.
Genius.
Guys, what do you think?
Can I just say Mark Carney, in 2025, he gave this speech that I think turned out to be very prescient. And he said, actually, somebody gave me the quote.
It was in my newsletter today. That may be where you remember reading.
Might have been where you got it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's great. Well, can you quote it from memory?
Can't find it. Can't find the newsletter.
Oh, hey, I got it. The old relationship we had with the United States, based on deepening integration of our two economies and tight security and military cooperation, is over. Turns out that's true. It is over. This is bad for all kinds of reasons. Number one, so this is a 50% trade war. We are waging a 50% trade war in which they are doing a dollar for dollar retaliation of the trade war. So they are now imposing 50% tariffs on us. This has a lot of political implications, right? If you're in Michigan, Ohio, Alaska, like any of those northern border states, you get a lot of your energy from them. If you're in Michigan and you are making automobiles, which you are, you get a lot of your car parts from Canada, things that we just don't make here. We just don't make them here. And so everything is about to get even more expensive. This is like trade wars are not fun and not easy to win. It also pushes Canada more toward China, right? They are looking for a stable trading partner. And so like, this goes back to the idea of, this is how we commit superpower suicide, is by driving our allies into the arms of our competitors. Okay, if Trump wants to do this, like, I think that people need to learn the lesson that Trump is bad at leading the country. But Republicans must be out of their minds about doing this going into the midterms.
Yeah, I mean, Rob Sand, I saw, put out a tweet, Iowa governor candidate. So it's not a border state with Canada, but he's like 30% of our exports go to Canada. So that's like going to have a direct impact on our economy. It's already struggling in farm country. I mentioned Maine. I mean, Susan Collins kind of is concerned about this for good reason. A lot of interstate trade. And
a letter, Tim?
Strong letter. Worded. Yeah, very quite strong to quite strong on the letter from
maybe
Susan
an email.
Susan
maybe
Collins.
Not a letter. Yeah. Maybe just an email.
Maybe or Hoping. Text. Could be a text.
Text would be a direct. You'd be sure he saw
Natalie.
It was a text.
To Natalie, text. Not to the president, obviously.
Yeah, text to Natalie. So, look, I think that there are real political ramifications there. I said this on the show yesterday. I want to reiterate. It takes real chutzpah from Carney to do this. I know he has support from most Canadians on this, but there's going to be economic damage there, right? Like, and I just think that, this is a situation where, like, it is true in the micro that, like, a bad deal would have been better for them than no deal, right? If you're just looking purely at GDP. In the short run, if you're basing this on GDP, yeah. But I think it's important to acknowledge that, because I think that's what shows why this is, like, really a courageous move and an aggressive move, and one that, like, a lot of people have not been making that bet with Trump up till recently, like, both in geopolitics, but in business, a lot of guys are just like, well, I don't want any short-term pain, so we'll just go along to get along with his craziness. Huge kudos to him. Big contrast with Hakeem Jeffries in his key lime hat meeting with Jared Kushner behind the scene between Mark Carney and Jeffries. So it looks at, like, what the establishment, if you will, left and the two countries are doing. Just really quick on the lake, I think the good news about all this is, like, it feels really sad.
He's out of tricks, man. He's got nothing left.
And I have to be living down here by the Gulf of Mexico. You think about the vibe shift. When he came in and did the Gulf of America thing, like, people liked it. Like, there were Gulf of America hats around here. You're seeing a lot of them. Even my friends who are kind of non-political or whatever, anti-Trump, but just think it's still aren't as engaged here in my friend group. Some of them would make jokes about it. You know what I mean? There was some kind of, you know, whatever, locker room talk. You know what I mean? It's like alpha guys, like, after, you know, America, fuck yeah, we're back-to-back World War II champs. Like, there was, like, a little bit of that element to Gulf of America that I think was working. And I just don't think that works anymore. I don't think that you're going to see Lake America hats. I think that people roll their eyes at this. And I think this is related to kind of Sarah's Bush line point, but also vibe shift. It's like, I don't know if these games work when people don't feel like things are going well, you know?
I do think that's right. I have two other quick points. One is, this idea that he's going to rename Lake Ontario Lake America. What's funny about that is that the lake that was there first, like, not the province, is named for the lake, and the lake is named for a Native American tribe. Yeah. So,
for a fun fact.
That is one interesting fact. The other thing, the more substantive point, I wonder what you guys think about this. To Tim's point, Carney is making an unusual move in standing up to Trump. But I do wonder, much like the Iranians are getting a lot more information about Trump through negotiations and Trump's backing off all the time, we've watched Trump taco on tariffs now a whole bunch. And I do wonder if Carney's thinking, you know what, if I stand up to the guy, I bet he tacos, because that's what he's done in the past. He's going into an election season, or Republicans are, at least. He's going to get pressure for this. And so I think it could actually be kind of a savvy move, too.
I mean, I think Mark Carney can't lose either way, frankly. So he's given three major speeches. I wrote about this. This is a little newsletter I do every day. It's called The Triad. You should sign up for it. Maybe even read it sometimes. And so the first one is early spring of 2025. And this is a moment when the rest of the world is still thinking, well, we can finesse it with this guy. It's only 4 years. If we just give him what he wants. And what, you remember that moment? And Carney's the one who said that era is over. He just says it flatly. And so we then fast forward to this past January, January 2026. He's in Davos and he gives the middle power speech. And this is one of the things he says. He says, the less powerful nations, one of the things we must do to project our power is to speak the truth. And he goes on to quote Vaclav Havel and the power of the powerless. Little depressing to understand that somebody, leader of the free world, is quoting the power of the powerless about standing up to us in America, where we are the Soviets now. Great. But what he does is he lays out.
It was us on the side of Havel, you know, for people who haven't.
Right.
Don't remember right. that. Haven't read their recent Eastern European history.
So what he does is, though, he lays out a roadmap for how the middle powers can band together. And this is a, you know, if you are France or you are the European Unions or you are the Japanese or the South Koreans or you are us in Canada, we are not powerless. It is not written in stone that we can be carved up by these great powers. And here he's very explicitly talking about China, the United States, and Russia. And so he puts out a blueprint for how they can band together to form sort of a new alliance. And then he gives this speech on Sunday where he says, no, we're not going to do this. Again, it's just, this is not a one-off. This is a guy who has a very clear strategic vision for Canada. Canada is our second largest trading partner. They're enormously important to us. And if the world sees that Canada can do this and that they can decouple from us, and I mean, a lot of Canada's, you know, long-range planning has to do with thinking about, do we extend our trading ties north, south, or east, west? And the clear answer for them is they're going to go east, west, right? They're going to become closer to the EU and closer to Asia, closer to China. And you know, once these things all have to, a lot of them have to do with like energy infrastructure, right? Once you start making these plans, you can't just rip them up and pivot back. Well, you know, President Ossoff, everything will go back to normal. No, this stuff, you know, maybe things will be nicer under a President Ossoff and we could have like better trading terms temporarily. But in terms of making long-term plans, Canada has decided where they're going. And the rest of the world is deciding where they're going. This is why the Europeans are standing up their own defense industrial base and why they are decoupling from military interoperability of like defense systems. And I don't know. It'd be nice if we could have leadership like that in America. But here's the thing. Can you imagine a serious person like Mark Carney being elected president in America of either party? Because I can't. I think it's flatly
impossible. I can.
Oh, come on. An economist by trade?
I think we're headed for better days. Yeah.
I love that. Okay. That's great. Sure.
I love that too.
Why not?
I have high hopes. I have high hopes for the Democrats in going into 2028. JBL just said President Ossoff. Now, granted, he's not an economist, but look.
He's not an economist either. He's a documentary filmmaker who's like really good at, you know, media narratives. This is what I'm saying. Like, even if you believe that Americans could elect somebody else like a John Ossoff or a Pete Buttigieg, that still is a category difference anyway.
Let's talk about Ossoff for a second. I finally got to enjoy a focus group podcast.
Oh, no, wait, Tim, sorry, you're going to have to wait. First, we got to have a word from our sponsors.
Okay, I got to tell you about this game-changing product I use before I listen to the focus group podcast. Because usually, you know, I need a little help to get through it. Not this week, though. We'll talk about it after the after the ad read. I also will probably use it. I don't know. Coming up here in a couple of weeks, we've got Lane Kiffin kickoff opener, Baton Rouge. We'll be up there, and you know, before I head out to Tiger Island, I'll turn to the product by our sponsor. It's called Pre-Alcohol by ZBiotics. ZBiotics Pre-Alcohol Probiotic Drink is the world's first genetically engineered probiotic. It was invented by PhD scientists to break down acetaldehyde. Acetaldehyde? JVL, you were 1/16th of a doctor. Acetaldehyde.
Yes. Correct.
A byproduct of drinking alcohol. Pre-alcohol produces an enzyme that's designed to break down this byproduct. Pre-alcohol Make pre-alcohol your first drink of the night. Drink responsibly, and you can enjoy your next day's activities. Zebadox has sold more than 14 million bottles and earned the trust of thousands, including me and some of my friends and some listeners who've regaled me with the stories of their evenings after having Zebadox, and I've met them out in this great country of ours. Try for yourself today. And if you're unsatisfied, they'll refund you your entire order. No questions asked. Head to zbiotics.com/next level, code next level for 15% off your first order. So I turned it on. The focus, the teaser got me this weekend. You know, I was like, okay, you know, I might just do this. I was doing a little bit of little exercise in my room, you know, and I was like, maybe I'll listen to the focus group. It'll distract me. Usually the rage, you know, helps me move from 10 pounds to 15 or whatever it is, my little baby weights. And instead, you were talking to Amy Walter, and the group was like MAGAs, or not MAGAs. The group was people that voted for Trump.
Yeah.
And they liked John Ossoff.
Yes.
And it wasn't as important. It was not, because the group that we have talked about a lot, and they were important, particularly in midterms, you know, particularly in Georgia, right? Is like you have these college educated, you know, post UVA business school frat guys that have been Republican voters their whole life, but like don't really like Trump, and their wives really hate Trump, and they're just like, okay, you know, they voted for Democrats mostly. They might have voted for Brian Kemp and Raphael Warnock, like that group, this sort of Mitt Romney-ish, never Trumper, suburban cohort. There's a lot of them in Georgia. Like Georgia's, and that's part of the reason why Democrats won Georgia the one time. And so there's a lot of those voters. But this was like not that. Like this was a group of like really more Trumpy, low information sounding voters.
Yeah. So the important thing to know about these voters is that they're just very not super plugged in. And
oh yeah.
Okay, but this is the category of voters that break late and decide elections. And in 2024, they broke for Trump because they didn't know what Kamala Harris stood for, and they wanted the economy that Trump gave him in his first term back, right? It's all their thing. The first 3 years. It's fine. But, you know, I'm channeling them.
I'm just joking.
And these are the same people who could theoretically elect Mark Carney in America, right?
Yeah. That's right. That's right. Okay. And I mean that in part because the thing that jumped out to me was, A, these were Trump disapprovers. And I got to say, just as a screener question, we often do this. We look at the persuadables by saying, like, are you a Trump? Like, do you think he's doing a somewhat bad or very bad job? That category and cohort is getting easier and easier to find because there's a lot more of them, the Trump disapprovers. And in fact, honestly, if you're got your yen for some just MAGAs hating on Trump, go listen to the Florida episode because that was bananas too. But when I was in this, when I was listening to it, I hadn't checked first to see what kind of voters they were. And I checked with my team. I was like, wait, are these all Trump voters? Because they were A, so down on Trump, but they were, a lot of them were pretty into Ossoff. There are a couple guys that weren't so much because they just like really don't like Democrats in general. But they liked Ossoff. A lot of the group liked Ossoff. But the number one thing that people said, multiple people said the same thing, John Ossoff cares about the little guy. And I'm sorry, JVL, this is good news.
What does that mean?
There's a couple things that it means. One, broadly speaking, their impression of Ossoff is that he cares about people like them. That's a polling question that often gets asked that Trump has.
I understand that's their impression. Yeah.
Okay.
I meant, what of them, having watched John Ossoff's senatorial career, made them say, yes, that vote shows me that he cares about people like me.
What's cares about really the little guy.
Yeah, it wasn't really votes. When you were listening to it, they did have some specific examples, like this is where doing local press still matters and all this, having young, vibrant people who can communicate still matters. Like the one lady had an example of, oh, you know, in my community, there were issues with low-income housing or people were getting screwed over by landlords or something, and Ossoff came and helped. Like, there was at least one person had a tangible item.
He's got great constituent services, is clear. It is an article of faith in Georgia that you can get a hold of somebody from Ossoff's office and he will help you, or they will help you. It's important.
Love that. That's great.
Okay.
So I thought it was mostly just encouraging for me. I don't know how much more we did talk about it. Like, it's just that, and people go listen to the episode, like the demo of the voter. And I didn't, like, you didn't send me a memo. I don't see, like, whatever, like what their income or college attainment was, but just listening to it, you could tell. You could tell what kind of voter it was. And it was a voter that the Democrats have really struggled with, you know, this kind of less engaged, you know, less high trust type of voter. So there you go. Something to watch with Asa.
Yeah, he is. Yeah.
All right. Also down south in South Carolina, we have a runoff primary tonight with Darlene Graham coming up. Ralph Norman. I was listening to Tim, you and Bill talk about this yesterday, and the assumption seemed to be like Darlene will win. I don't know.
I don't feel that way anymore.
Do we? Because I look at this and I kind of feel like at best coin flip and maybe Norman. Like, Darlene Graham has been horrible in the stump.
She's right. Been really bad. I mean, like, in that, you know, it's this kind of thing that, like, people make fun of her about on Twitter. Like, oh, she didn't know what we should do about Taiwan. And then it was like, oh, she didn't know what to do about the Dreamers. But, like, enough of those things add up. And I do, and this is what, the fucking third election of the year, like, primary election of the year. They had to have a, you know, they had a primary, and then Lindsay dies, and you have another, but now you have a runoff. And so, like, this is, you got to be real engaged to be turning out to vote in this, like, runoff primary election in August in South Carolina. And so I do think a lot of the people saw that. Surely many Republicans don't care and are very excited to have an empty vessel, do whatever Donald Trump wants. But maybe there's some other people who are like, this is a little bit crazy. And Ralph Norman has been around, and he has this weird profile because he was an insurrectionist, like kind of a point man for the insurrection and the Nikki Haley endorser.
Yeah.
So that kind of cuts both ways. It's hard to tell. Like, it's hard for me to put myself in the brain of a pro-insurrection Republican about whether they're for Ralph because he was there with them fighting with the Patriots, or they're anti-Ralph because he betrayed them by going for Nikki Haley. I don't know. But I do think, you know, if you hear from people in the state also, like, his part of the state, like that the Greenville part of the state is where a lot of this vote comes from, and it's kind of his territory. And I don't, the texts I've been receiving from South Carolina friends seem to indicate that Ralph has a real shot to win, and that Darlene has really kind of embarrassed herself. And there's some misogyny in the, you might imagine some misogyny in the Republican primary electorate.
Sarah, a couple nuggets here from the campaign. Darlene being recorded in what looked like a sports bar said, "It kind of does bother me that you're recording me. I'm gonna be honest, without my permission." She's a U.S. senator out campaigning, doesn't want people recording her.
I got news for her about what it's like to be a senator.
When CBS News asked Graham whether she planned to bring up a specific proposal or legislation on affordability, she did not offer any plan and said that we'll deal with that, quote, when I get there. She's already there, though. Yesterday, I was asked by an MS Now reporter at a press conference if she agreed with her brother that Joe Biden had been lawfully elected president and that she would have certified the election. She said, "I think our election system is broken." I mean,
what do you want me to? You're, okay,
is she trying? Is she trying to win? Because these do not sound like somebody who's actually spent five minutes thinking about.
Of course not. But like, I don't know. Have you listened to Tommy Tuberville talk? Like, this idea that she is.
He watches the news. It's
fair.
Kind of. I mean, he watches Fox News, I guess. Right. But like, could he explicate the issues going on in Taiwan, why their freedom matters? I'm not sure. And so I don't know that she's any dumber than any other MAGA era candidate. I will say, I mean, Ron Johnson, like, there's a lot of
I don't think
dummies.
She's dumb.
Okay. You just think she's...
I wasn't going that way. So I don't think she's dumb. I think she's almost certainly preferable to Ralph Norman to do this job. What I'm suggesting is she doesn't look like somebody who's spent a whole lot of time thinking about
how
she's going to win votes and win a campaign.
You know why? Because she assumes that the Trump endorsement will do it. Like, this is the reason that this race is interesting, besides the Lindsey Graham of it all, is that you've got Trump, who has endorsed this complete neophyte, and she did in the overall race when they did the first round, because now they're in a runoff, she got 33% and Norman got 25%. And I don't know if you listened to the focus group episode about South Carolina. It was interesting to me that the voters thought she was too inexperienced. Like, they just thought she didn't have the experience, but she still was the top vote getter. The thing is, Ralph Norman is also annoying to voters. He's one of these Freedom Caucus guys. I think the Nikki Haley thing must just be like a personal friendship from being both from South Carolina.
South Carolina. Yeah, that's what I assumed it was.
Because he's a pretty standard weirdo, I'm a pain in the ass of the MAGA establishment, Freedom Caucus dude. And so I think that I'm seeing a lot of ads here in D.C. about the White House wanting her and against Norman, because I think they are trying to signal that they do not want him.
Think Ralph would be better. Who cares? Like, they're both horrible and disgusting in a lot of ways, and they're both 100 years old, and it's crazy. Like, it's really like the idea. It's an interesting test. Like, can Donald Trump just put an empty vessel of a woman who is just going to do whatever he says into the United States Senate? Maybe we're going to find out tonight. But Ralph. Like, Ralph voted for the Epstein file release, the Massey thing. Mm-hmm. So I would rather have him in there, which I hope, you know, no MAGA primary voters hear this before they go out to vote today, because that would be unhelpful to him. But by the time this is out, the polls will probably be closed. But, you know, he's 73, 74. He went with Haley. He bucked Trump on Epstein. I don't know. You know, something crazy happens. There's a chance. I don't have a ton of hope about this person or his integrity or whatever, but there's a chance that, like, he gets a bee in his bonnet about something and stops, you know, is the fourth vote that we need to oppose some crazy Trump thing. There's at least a hope. Darlene Graham is enough. Like, she is a cipher.
A cipher?
Cipher?
Cipher? I didn't let it go, though, because I enjoy oddball pronunciations. I think they keep the whole theater of the mind thing from
Don Lemon. What's he up to?
God, it's so hard to talk all day. You know, you can't nail everything.
All right, Sarah, talk to us about Upwork.
This show is sponsored by Upwork. Every business owner hits a point where they need more expertise than they can handle alone. Not me, obviously. I can handle the expertise alone. But another full-time hire isn't always the answer. That's where Upwork comes in. It's where growing businesses find highly skilled freelance specialists, not just for one-off tasks, but to build the entire team at a fraction of the cost and without the commitment of permanent headcount. Anybody who runs a business knows that permanent headcount is very expensive. Upwork gives your business fast access to highly skilled specialists with deep expertise so you can fill critical gaps, launch projects faster, and scale support up or down without committing to full-time headcount. Upwork is where businesses find highly skilled freelance professionals for specialized work, from software development and AI implementation to marketing design and business operations. You can browse profiles, review past work, and get help scoping the role so you can hire with confidence and get started quickly. With Business Plus, you can access the top 1% of talent on Upwork. AI-powered shortlisting delivers a curated shortlist of top freelancers matched to your goals in under 6 hours. No endless searching required. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's Upwork.com, Upwork.com. Thanks, Upwork.
All right. I don't know how much time we're going to spend on this, but yesterday, Supreme Court lifted an injunction on a Trump executive order banning mail-in ballots. It seems to our friends at Lawfare suggest to us that this is all going to be superseded by other lawsuits happening in reasonably short order. Are either of you super worked up about this one way or another, or no?
The internet had gotten me briefly worked up about it, and then I actually went and read about it and then talked about it with Andrew Weissman on Illegal News, which should be, they'll probably be out at similar times as this show. Andrew was very much, I guess he was live on TV when this broke and everybody was losing their minds. And he was trying to explain that this is not worth losing your mind over. It is worth being concerned about how things might go going forward, because there's a couple injunctions. And so one of the injunctions still stands. But basically, the basic nut, if I can explain it as succinctly as possible, is that there is an executive order in which Trump is trying to tell the Postal Service that they might not be able to deliver ballots to certain places or certain groups of, like, he's trying to muck with who gets ballots and then who can mail them in. The main thing is that the Supreme Court made it very clear in what they put out in this ruling that this they weren't ruling on the main question of what the USPS should do. They're simply saying that the USPS needs to come to them and say, this would be our criteria, right, for who gets them and who doesn't. And that criteria has just been issued. Now, so people shouldn't be as freaking out just yet. However, the indication from the court and the way the language was made it clear that if they got this, that they might be willing to take it up before the midterms when we're this close, which is sort of crazy. So it is not the like dagger in mail voting, but it is another step towards something dangerous. So we shouldn't take our eye off of it. We just shouldn't think that all is lost yet.
We'll see. You know, I hear the caution. It's just, we are in an insane world.
Yes.
So, I mean, I guess the only thing I would say is, like, I did watch How a Bill Becomes a Law as a child. And, like, this is not right. Like, the president doesn't just get to make fiat, you know, from the White House and then get sued and then have the Supreme Court, like, argue about whether the person suing has standing, and then the fiat, you know, eventually trickles through the courts and gets reviewed, you know, and, like, it's a totally broken process. And it would be nice if we had an awake Congress that wanted to, I don't know, put some limits on that.
Or a Supreme Court that said, like, no, we're not going to take up your birthright citizenship case because it's in black and white in the Constitution.
Right. Yeah. Supreme Court. Yeah. Yeah, that's great. More good news. Two dead people in Pennsylvania from measles. First deaths in 35 years from measles in the state. First measles death this year in the United States. In 2019, we had 1,250 measles cases. In 2025, 2,286 measles cases. We're 2,813. So this is America's golden age of measles. And we're the hottest country anywhere.
What about mumps? How are we doing on mumps?
In terms of measles. I don't know about mumps or rubella, but we're going to look very strongly into those as well. And I don't know. Are we feeling good about this? Are we healthy yet?
I tweeted at Bill Cassidy, still Senator Bill Cassidy, to figure out if he had any comment on this. Pennsylvania is my home state. And this, of course, there hasn't been, there hasn't been cases of measles in forever. The other thing is they just, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but there was somebody put out a report of kindergartners who have asked for waivers against getting vaccinated as it reached its highest point in, I don't know, maybe ever. And so lots of parents are opting their kids out of vaccination now. This was in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, where, of course, RFK had campaigned dissing on vaccines. Somebody said this earlier, JBL, I think it was you, where you said, you know, you can't just, President Ossoff won't be able to just come in here and put things back together the way they were. This is a trust problem. Like, we have the senior most health official in the country has degraded the public's trust in vaccines. And you can't just get everybody back. Like, this will continue to be a problem.
Sarah, won't it be even worse if a President Ossoff starts telling people, for the love of God, please vaccinate your children? Won't that make 44% of the country more likely to not vaccinate their children?
Yeah, no, you're right. The idea that polarization and negative polarization don't come for this health. I mean, it already is. It already is coming for the health stuff. All I have to say is if Bill Cassidy's looking for something to do in the wake of Donald Trump actively campaigning against him to cost him his Senate seat. If he's looking for something to do, one thing he could do is he could start touring the country, apologizing for this as a doctor and saying that he got this wrong and that Kennedy is wrong and he's scaring everybody unnecessarily and making us all much more likely to die as a result.
Nice idea. I don't think that's going to happen. I do. Byron Donalds. Did you see this? Republican nominee in Florida was asked about this and whether he, as governor of Florida, will be encouraging, you know, parents to get their kids vaccinated. And he kept ducking the question and being like, we have no problem. No, I'm not going to do that. No, the problem is with the immigrants. The problem is with the migrants. The illegal migrants are the ones bringing
We're going to force them to get vaccinated.
And so it's kind of one of these, it's an interesting gambit where it's like, we're going to do, I'm going to do a little light xenophobia. And the xenophobia is going to be, I'm going to accuse the dirty migrants of doing or not doing the thing that like my voters actually don't want to do.
Right.
And so it's, you would think that eventually, I mean, Byron Donalds' brain is just like, you know, kind of want the hamster kind of really limping on the wheel and it's like kind of not moving, but you think that eventually like the wheel would get spinning and you'd be like, huh, okay. I don't, this slur doesn't really work actually, because it's the thing I'm accusing them of not getting vaccinated is the thing that's happening among the voters that I need. And that's why I'm not saying anything about it. And it's pretty, it was the most discussed, like we did a little COVID, whatever retrospective on the show, had some negative criticism from JVL and some listeners about me and Sarah's view about the Democratic management of COVID. Like, as I said on that show, didn't hear
Donald Trump was president during COVID.
The worst governor of all was DeSantis. I said this at that show. It's like, it is crazy. Like, it's crazy. Like, DeSantis was trying to out crazy Trump. He's like, the way to do it is to become kookier on vaccines. And so like in every other state in the country, when after the vaccine happened, when the death rate like starts to plateau in Florida, like Florida starts going up the rankings. Of up the per capita death chart rankings, like after we had the life-saving vaccine, and then he puts in the total freak to be the Florida Surgeon General, and like Byron Donalds is considering continuing down that path. So I assume the measles tests are coming there.
It'll be really horrible, and I hope it doesn't happen. But
me too.
If the Democratic Party were to just embark on a campaign encouraging people to use seatbelts. And especially if people like AOC were to just do some public service announcements saying, you know what, seatbelts save lives. Make sure you use your seatbelt. Make sure your kids are in seatbelts when you go to drive. I mean, it would be terrible if there was some negative polarization around seatbelt use. And I hope it never happens.
Yeah. Dude, I thought you were going to go somewhere different, which is how do you get Red America to start vaccinating their kids again? Well, if you say this idea of saying it's immigrants who don't vaccinate, right? You say that's a hallmark.
Maybe Byron Donalds like, is doing a 3D chess thing.
Use their racism and xenophobia to make them healthier. I'm just, you know.
No, this is a case where I think we ought to have, you know, revealed preferences. People ought to be free to encounter the consequences of their choices.
Freedom.
Freedom. More Kennedy Center news, guys. It was great from Ken Delanian of MS Now. In a new court filing, the Trump administration says that without their restoration fundraising effort on the Kennedy Center, they might just have to demolish the whole thing and turn it into an outdoor amphitheater. And that would be a tragedy. It would be a tragedy if that had to happen. But they can't rule out that that won't be necessary. Because if you don't
put his name
on the building,
I'm sorry.
You can't have a building.
I'm pulling for it.
You want an amphitheater?
And you should be pulling for it, JVL, because it really lays the groundwork to tearing down all of his nonsense. Yep. The Ark,
the
ballroom. Like if they tear down the Kennedy Center, it really gives
a memorial to a slain president.
He has the memorial at you know, at Arlington. Still,
I hope they do.
They're not going to knock that. Are they going to exhume? I would be against that. I'd be against like exhuming JFK's body and tearing down the monument at Arlington and turning it into like a Trump casino resort hotel. I'd be against that. But no, you want to keep it, the Kennedy Center?
I'd like it because the way this would unfold is a bunch of gigantic demolition excavators would show up and start pulling it down. And then we get an emergency court filing. And then somebody in the Supreme Court, Sam Alito, would write an order saying, well, I mean, we can't,
this law.
We can't stop it. They've already started. And so, you know, it would be really logistically impossible to stop them because they've already pulled down half of it. So, I want to see
what just happened with the ball.
Burn it all down. Burn it all down. This is I'm the Joker in the Dark Knight when Batman, Christian Bale's Batman, is like coming at him on the motorcycle and he's staying there. And the Joker's just like, do it, hit me. I want you to hit me. I want you to do it. That's where I am.
Okay. Well, that's healthy for everyone.
Counterpoint, Sarah. What? In favor of keeping the Kennedy Center standing. Sarah Longwell, you have 2 minutes.
I don't even need 2 minutes. I just think we can't get in the habit of presidents being like, I'm just going to demolish. Nobody, no, we're not getting any donations and no one's coming to our shows because I keep trying to put my name on it. And so now I'm renovating it because it's so terrible. And in fact, now it's so terrible that we just have to tear it down because I will not abide people not coming to my, theater to see musicals. Oh, what's his name? Rick Grinnell, the theater gay who got put in charge of it, got into it with me on Twitter yesterday. And I was just
healthy.
Yeah, whatever. I was like, what do you call a president who manages to lose both a trade war and a hot war at the same time? And he seemed to think the answer was Barack Obama. Shocking. Shocking.
That doesn't make any sense.
I mean, he's got a lot of time on his hands since he's not, looking at the different armrests at the Kennedy Center. I think that I was discussing on the Daily today, we did a lot of debt talk and the bond market and yield curves, all that stuff. And I think that I just as a consumer would be happy to contribute to the national debt if a Democrat ever gets back in. Like if I get to take out the sledgehammer and take a couple thwacks myself. And I think we could probably raise a good trillion.
We could crowdfund that.
400 billion, 1%. We could do 1% of the total debt.
This is a great idea. Do you know how much money I would give to be able to get just a corner of the T out of one of these buildings? It is going to be fun to tear all of these down when we get there. You guys don't drive past the Kennedy Center as much as I do. It is the idea that they would tear it down and turn it into an amphitheater is bananas, logistically bananas. It's just Trump threatening things just because he can.
Maybe they'll rename the Potomac the America River while they're at it.
How many more things? What else do we got to rename?
He'll find things. This is what happens though when you are failing. I mean, he's failing so hard that all he can focus on, and we are all in the midst of an old man being like people who kind of get dementia and they start to just go back and refocus on the things that mattered to them sort of in their prime. And so he literally does not care about these midterms. He does not care that nobody can afford groceries. He does not care that oil prices are out of control. He does not care that he's putting more tariffs on top of things or that somehow we've had many national outbreaks of, I don't know, blueberries are killing people now. Lettuce was killing people because they've taken all the people away who do quality control. He doesn't care about any of that. He cares about his ballroom. Cares about getting his name on the Kennedy Center.
And after John Ossoff wins by 10 points, maybe it'll be named Georgia. Like Georgia, it's George Bush. We don't like George Bush. It's Georgia. They went for Trump. Maybe just, I don't know, Donna.
He cares about trans stuff in the WNBA. We'll talk about that in a minute. This show is sponsored by Tempo Meals. There's something about this time of year that actually makes me want to get my life together again. New routine, better habits, and actually eating like an adult. I've even taken up a new fitness journey.
Really?
I have.
What
I'm
is
hoping
happening?
To have a partner on my fitness journey, Clanks? Sarah.
I'm on my own fitness journey. No, it's pickleball.
Did you get anything in the mail yesterday?
It's pickleball. He sent me I haven't even opened the box. I know what's inside of it. I know what's in it.
He sent you a pickleball net?
I think he sent me paddles. I didn't open it, but I'm pretty sure he sent me paddles.
So part of all this is also eating like an adult, too. Tempo has been the easiest part of that reset for pickleball. You got to go out and buy paddles, and then you have to test your paddles and demo them and make time to go. But with Tempo, 2 minutes, and I've got a real meal, no skipped lunches, and no falling back into old habits. Tempo delivers fresh, chef-crafted, dietitian-approved meals right to your door. It's making it easy for me to eat well and save time on my busiest days. Each meal is perfectly portioned for lunch or dinner and ready in just 2 minutes. That means real food, real fast, without the sad desk lunch or drive-through regret. With over 20 recipes every week made from nutrient-rich ingredients, Tempo keeps things exciting and helps you stay consistent with healthy habits. And no matter your goals, there's a Tempo meal for you. Protein-packed meals with over 30 grams of protein, fiber-rich, calorie-conscious, gut support, even GLP-1 smart meals. I am pumped to try the lemon piccata salmon and the Hawaiian pineapple barbecue meatballs, two of the new meals that are on their way to me right now. For a limited time, Tempo is offering my listeners 60% off your first box. Go to tempomeals.com/thenextlevel. That's tempomeals.com/thenextlevel for 60% off your first box. Tempomeals.com/thenextlevel. Rules and restrictions may apply. So we touched on the Enes Kanter stuff last week. There's more of that. But before we get to that, Abdul El-Sayed went on Jesse Waters' show, and we got a look at the midterm strategy there.
Abdul, you're a doctor, right? Selectively.
I am.
So you think it's okay for a parent to slash his kid's thing-a-ling off? You think that's okay?
I mean, do you really want to have this conversation? Are you circumcised?
Yeah, but I mean, that's a Jesse, personal question.
Okay.
Doctor.
So you probably should want to move on. You probably should want to move on.
Is circumcision's different than castration?
I think it's a problem. It's a problem that you think that you get to decide what happens between a parent, a doctor, and a patient. And I'm just saying that, yes, circumcision is surgery on a kid's ding-a-ling. So if you really want to bring that up, you can. I just think you guys are really selective about how you want to talk about these things.
Abdul, Michigan's not going for that. That is sick stuff.
Huh. So was this... It seems like both sides think they got a W here.
No, we all lost. We all lost during that exchange.
But maybe not.
All L's. L's all around. Look, I want these guys to be able to go into Fox and do that. I've been asking for that. So I'm happy that Abdul is doing that. But you got to understand what you're dealing with here. Like these guys, if you just watch the rest of the interview, you know, he's doing the, what's the size of the budget? And what do you think about reparations? It's just like they have nothing on the topic of what Trump is doing right now, because Trump's record is so bad. And so if you're going to do this, you got to be really deft at being able to handle that. And you know, or else you're going to walk into just kind of these culture war questions, because that's what these guys want to talk about. I mean, I'm sure we'll talk about it, but there's the Ennis thing. There's Pete Hegseth, really loves saying trannies now. It's something that he talks about a lot. He likes to do transgender slurs. So, like, that's what they try to do. They don't have a story to tell. And, I just think if you're a Democrat, you're going into this place, you have to be ready for that. And it seems like the circumcision thing he was doing off the cuff. Like, it didn't feel like
I don't know. I think he tried to
planned.
I think he tried to plan that. That is his response.
I don't know about that. I just like, it's just like, I'm not thrilled with, I don't know, circumcision. You can tell me that maybe that's a little outdated. But like, that's, we can have another conversation about that if we want. But, people, like, this is not popular. I think you can be very respectful to trans people while recognizing that it's important, you're running a campaign, and like castration of children is not popular. And like, you're really walking into their trap if you're going to go on a show and like you end up talking about child castration. Like, that's not, Abdul's job is to win over, again, Alyssa Slotkin won Michigan. Important to remember. So like, he's got to win over moderate voters that voted for Slotkin. Everybody's job is different. Different states, you have different voters you're trying to get to. That's Abdul's job. Was he advancing that goal there? I don't think so.
I don't think so either. I don't think that was a particularly strong performance, which is, it's not even that he's trying to persuade people who are on Fox News. He's trying to get clipped, showing that he can take on a guy like Jesse Waters, right? That, and make him look silly. I think they fought that kind of to a draw a little bit. But I also think this is where Democrats... This is why I wrote the chapter Trans America, which is that there's a lot about the way that voters talk about trans issues. But the fact is, Republicans want to live in the area of sports and child transitioning, because the majority of Americans do affirm trans people's right to exist and to have dignity and not to be discriminated against. Like, that is still a majority position in this country. Sports and kids transitioning, those are 70-30 issues. And so, like, they are deeply politically unpopular. And I think if you're going to go in there and make your case, you have to be better than that.
Do we all need to be detoxing ourselves?
Before I go asking, how can I detox? I have to look inward. Okay, what am I doing? Can I identify at least three ways that my body detoxes and ways to support that? I promise if my message was more dramatic like that, I would have millions of followers and make millions of dollars. But I cannot sleep at night trying to sell someone something that their body already does naturally.
We're living in a crazy world now. I think it's a lot of people fear a lack of control. And as a result of this, this is the way of them trying to make sense of the world and try to take control over their own bodies. So by actively doing something, I'm going to detoxify things, therefore I'm going to feel better, I think is absolutely one of the reasons that detoxifying has become so popular.
Listen to the full episode of Health vs. Hype with the American Medical Association on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Matt Rogers from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
This is Bowen Yang from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
You know when people try a new food and suddenly it's like, wait.
That's the reaction a lot of people are having when they first try Kewpie mayo.
It's the one with the red cap and the little baby on the bottle. You've probably seen it in the grocery store before.
And if you've ever just walked past it, some people would say that's a huge mistake.
Because this mayo is different.
Most mayonnaise uses whole eggs. Kewpie only uses egg yolks, which gives it this rich umami flavor. It's smoother, deeper, and almost buttery.
Once people try it, they start putting it on everything.
Egg sandwiches, fries, burgers. Some fans even swear by dipping pizza crust in it.
And once you notice it, you start seeing it everywhere.
Chefs use it. Restaurants use it. People who really care about flavor use it.
Never tried it? Grab the bottle with the red cap next time you're at the store.
Put it on just about anything.
Then you'll understand.
Kewpie, the original Japanese mayonnaise.
By the way, there's a bunch of stuff on the clip economy. I mean, this is, I had somebody that asked me for advice. They're like, they're going to go on the CNN show where they fight, where they food fight. And they're like, hey, what do you think?
Which one?
The Abby, the
particular food fight show. Yeah. Like, what's your advice? And I was said to you, I was like, nobody's watching.
Don't
CNN.
Go on.
Okay, they'd already agreed. Okay. So that was the ante. I'm like, nobody's watching CNN except it's like on at airports. It's on the back. It's on the background in the office. Elderly people are watching. Like that's it. Like that's all. Nobody's watching. So it's a clip game. And I was like, you have to go in there. And like, think about what your clips are immediately. And like, you have to answer their questions, like the old media training term.
Satisfy and steer.
Me and Sarah used to do media training together, satisfy and steer. Yeah. You got to satisfy the question. But then like, there's just so much out there. Like that is where it's like not really a fight to a draw. That like the winning clip is about the people jumping off the USS Abraham Lincoln or about whatever, the cost of, you have to pick, like you have to come up with, you have to go in there and be like, I'm going to own Jesse on this.
Yeah.
And then the team has to be like, hey, here's the first clip that goes out. And like, you got to be pushing that to have the conversation be about that. So anyway, that's kind of the game. And if you're not going to play that game, then it's like, don't do it.
Yeah. I mean, you have to be able in those situations. And I think that Pete Buttigieg is somebody who can do this, is to say when they hit you with that is to be like, you know what, Jesse, here's the thing. Here's what you're doing. You want to talk about this thing that affects almost nobody because you don't have a positive story to tell about something that affects almost everybody, which is how much everything costs because Trump got us into these costly wars. He's got these trade wars that he's losing. Like, you've got to be able to get yourself on offense. And I don't think the circumcision comparison gets you on the offense footing that he wanted to be on.
But these guys, this other thing there, and I is like, they're so all in on this.
Yeah.
So this is to the other time. I don't know, Javiel, do you want to just talk? Like, so this is, again, as I mentioned, Hegseth is out there saying that, like, we're doing, this is where, if you brought up trans stuff, this is where I would take it. It's like Pete Hegseth is out there, giving speeches now. He's like, we do training, not trannies. And it's like, oh, great. Oh, you can... You're going to try to get outrage attention over your fucking insulting attack on transgender people. Instead of that, I think my response would be like, well, maybe we need some more transgender people in the military. Maybe we wouldn't be getting our ass kicked by people in caves right now. And like, everybody's gas wouldn't be $4 a gallon. Like, you guys think you're so fucking tough, but you know, like, you have botched, you changed the name to Department of War, started one war, lost. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that is the place for Democrats to be.
So much, and it's so much worse than that, Tim. I mean, I'm sorry. On this trainees versus training thing, Hegseth and the leadership there are so obsessed with physical training. Like, one of the big things they've had is like the standards for the circumference of the, you know, the waist and the BMI that soldiers can have. They want to tighten that up. And there's been like a big thing about like, hey, you know, we have a bunch of really fit guys who are built like fire plugs because that's what they're built like. And like, these standards are making it really hard for them to pass and all this shit. And at the same time, they're slashing like the experimental drone warfare program. Like, the all of warfare is changing around them. We are, as we can see in Iran, absolutely sucking wind on drones. Yep. And instead, the leadership of the Pentagon is obsessing with like pull-up standards and push-up contest. It's the dumbest fucking thing I've ever seen.
I totally agree with you. But let me just make one last point on Abdullah Sayyad on Fox. I'm really rooting for that guy. He's in a
satisfied and steered.
Yeah, well, he's in a really important Senate race. No, this is related. I do think, though, that for some of these new candidates who are used to fighting with the center left and have spent a lot of the time fighting with Democrats, they have not gotten their reps in fighting with Republicans. And you don't know how good you had it fighting with the center left, because the Republicans have an entire media ecosystem there built to figure out how to make you get dragged into the absolutely dumbest argument you could possibly have to engage in.
Seriously, thank you. Nothing but respect such a great point. Nothing but respect to Haley Stevens, who's really growing on me. But like, she sent like a 2,000 word memo to Politico today that was like incoherent, complaining about Abdul and various groups that went after her, etc. And it's just like, you're in a different level. Okay. Like, Jesse Waters sits here and like thinks about like the ways that he can trap you in the stupidest culture war imaginable. And he spends a lot of time like fighting with Jessica Tarloff and others and like doing this. Like, and yeah, I agree with you. I think that it's a different ball game, and there you can win. It's winnable. Like, this is not, you know, this isn't whatever, you know, Buckley versus James Baldwin on firing line or anything. Like, Jesse Waters is beatable. Okay. Yeah. But you gotta like actually know what you're going against and get ready for it. So that's my tip. I totally agree with you on that, Sarah.
All right. Listen, we've gone very long, but I need a little bit of Natalie Harp discourse, because I've been on fire on the Natalie Harp.
If people have not read your Natalie Harp newsletter, I have to tell you, can I just start? I want to set you up for this, JBL, because one of the things I promise the listeners, I'm not going to be fake outraged about things. There's a lot to be really outraged about. I'm not going to be fake outraged. And I was, you know, I was titillated, so to speak, by the Natalie Harp story, and I was amused. And so I was talking about it in that context for a while, but then eventually I was like, wasn't really actually outraged. I was a little bit concerned about some of the security elements there. But, like, you know, it had run its course. Like, I was focused on other things that were making me more mad. Long list out there. And so you dropped the news, your second Harp newsletter. And in my brain, I was like, you know, I'm going to save this one for later. I don't know if I have another Harp newsletter in me. And so I tweeted it. I'd be a good soldier. I was like, if you are not like me and you are a Harp, if you're interested in the story, you should read this. And then we started texting about it. And then I was like, okay, fine, I'll read it. And my mind is blown. Like, my mind is blown. And it has totally changed the way that I think about the whole relationship.
Wait, I'm sorry. Do you guys text without me?
This might have been a Slack. This might have been a Slack. Only about the triad. We only text about the triad with each other, because, you know, we don't want to embarrass you. We don't want it to get uncomfortable on the chain if we're texting about the triad, since we know you haven't read it.
It is true. I haven't read this one that I'm talking about. So
it's insane. You have to read it. If you're listening now and you haven't read it, like, literally stop, go read it, come back and hear JVL talk about it. Okay, go.
As I was thinking on this over the weekend, I just thought, you know, the whole origin story doesn't really make sense. And then the Daily Beast unearths the first video that she did, which looks like it's posted in 2017. And it's crazy, but it's because it's crazy in a very particular way, two particular ways. The first is that she frames her entire journey around Donald Trump's election. And so she has her medical accident in which she is infused with sterile water exactly one year to the day before Donald Trump wins victory and is elected president of the United States. An amazing coincidence that this thing, which is an incredibly rare medical mistake, because sterile water is so dangerous, it is not packaged in like big boluses because they don't want people to be able to make a stent. This is me, like 1/16th of the doctor. The idea of sterile water is use it to cut other medications that are then, anyway, it happens. It is a very rare mistake in medicine world.
It's like somebody taking out the wrong intestine, you know?
Yeah, or like, you know, oh, we cut off the wrong leg when we went in for the amputation. You know,
it happens.
We repaired the wrong ACL. So that happens 1 year. But at the end of this video that she does in 2017, the video is portrayed as like a testimonial, like because she's just a random person, right, talking about her. But at the end, there's a title card, like one of those, you know, like you're in the iMovie.
Like paid for or? Thing.
Well, so what it is, it's a title card. It goes to a black screen and the title is then The Forgotten, which is like the name of the video. And it has the patient, Natalie J. Harp, MBA. Like you're watching the credits of a movie. Like she was playing a character called The Patient in this little video essay called The Forgotten. Anyway, so after this, 2 years later, she has a LinkedIn essay, and then some booker at Fox reads the LinkedIn essay. And this LinkedIn essay takes a bunch of the things from the video and expands outward, but then it airbrushes and gets rid of some of the things from the video. And she is booked on Fox and Friends, and she goes on Fox and Friends, and clearly Trump is watching her. And he then seems to have called into Fox and Friends after seeing her and saying how great she is. And then it's like 12 days later, he invites her to some, you know, faith and freedom event somewhere, and she's up on stage. And this is where the whole thing begins. And her story, it strains credulity to begin with, but then there's all sorts of stuff that's like simply wrong in it. Like, you know, she claims that this Trump thing, which saved her life, again, I'm being a little technical here, but she claims this right to try order that Trump instituted saved her life. But the right to try concerns the use of medicines which have not finished passing FDA approval. So if you need,
if you are terminal, in process,
if you're terminal, right? So she does not seem to have been terminal, although sometimes she says she was terminal. But what she does say is she said that it's for what saved her was an off-label thing. So, which is to say that a medication that had been approved for a different use, an oncologist then using it for this other thing, which has nothing to do with right to try. And all this, her claims all happen before right to try has even happened.
She also says that the doctor is trying to push her to euthanasia.
She claims that the Democratic doctors in California are telling her that she should use physician-assisted suicide. She claims that she is constantly being told that she is a burden on her family and her country. I'm sorry, but I find it very, very hard to believe that a medical professional anywhere in America has ever told a patient that they should kill themselves because they are a burden on their family and their country.
I got to tell you this. People, there has been a conflict within two things that I've been saying on this podcast for about a year or two now. And I recognize the conflict and I've been critiqued about it, which is I believe that it would be important for the Democrats to win back people that believe in conspiracy theories. Because if you're just winning over people that are high trust and, you know, go by the book.
There's not enough of us, man.
Not enough of us.
You got 44 people nationwide.
You got to win over some crazies. Simultaneously to that, I've been kind of frustrated with some of the dumb conspiracy theories that have become in vogue among blue MAGA on the left, and I've been critiquing those. And so people are like, but Tim, you want the conspiracy theorists, but you don't like these conspiracy theories. And I've got great news for everybody. I found one that I like. And I'm interested in what happened here, and I'd like to see the long form medical records, I guess is all I'm saying. I'd like to see the long form medical records.
You know what? I would like the name of the medical professional who told her to kill herself, because that person should lose their license. Right?
Yeah.
If it's true, that person should lose their license. They should not be allowed to practice medicine.
Does it bother you guys? So I asked Andrew Weissman this. People should go listen to the Illegal News. I'm sure my answer that I gave earlier, you know, said it was terrible. And so just like, go listen to him explain it. He does a much better job. But one of the things I said was, what do you make of her not having her security clearance? Because actually, it's pretty wild that somebody who literally travels, including in the catering cart, with the president, who's everywhere he goes, who's running down the golf course chasing him, who prints out his tweets for him. She's clearly in round every conversation. She doesn't have security clearance. And I find that amazing. And Andrew said, I assumed that it was, you know, being inept, not caring about the rules. But what if it is that she would not pass security clearance? Like, this is not a person who could get clearance. In which case, like, they are, like, meaning they know that there's, and Trump was like, I don't care.
I just want to throw this at you. This is from a Fox Digital glow up on Natalie that was written a couple of years ago, in which the reporter spoke with two senators, one John Barrasso and one Lindsey Graham, and both of them were just cavilling over what an amazing, amazing woman Natalie Harp is. I text her if I need to get to the president, Senator Barrasso explained. If he doesn't pick up the phone, I know to go to Natalie and he gets the message. Senator Lindsey Graham also said he goes to Harp to set up anything from, quote, golf to the most sensitive foreign policy matters.
Cool.
She didn't have a clearance. And the foreign policy senator says that he goes to her with the most sensitive foreign policy matters. Okay, great.
This is a real butthurt emails moment.
Yeah, it really is. You could also, I said this, I forget where I said this, JVL, were you doing Bill Simmons when he was talking about the Tyson Zone? He had a theory back in the day, which was that like Mike Tyson had entered something called the Tyson Zone, which is like you could tell a person anything about Mike Tyson had done anything.
Oh, he would be like, yeah,
because he sounds so crazy. It was like, you know, whatever, like Mike Tyson, like, you know, wrestled a bear in the woods or whatever. You could tell him anything about Mike Tyson. I'm there with Natalie Harp. I mean, you could tell me literally anything about this story. You could tell me that she's a Russian agent. You could tell me that they're having an affair. You could tell me that she keeps his hairs in a locket. Like, you could tell
that
me
she changes his diapers. She's diapers. Like a secret nurse who goes with him. And
I literally
we haven't even spoken about
the brother.
The brother. Who's the brother? Seems cool. Loving psychedelic indie folk rock guy.
Yeah, we reached out to
seen him.
And what he said, she's crazy, right?
Yes, he said that she's crazy. The guy who has picked up his life and gone down to make music about Daniel Ortega, he says that his sister is nuts. Great.
You can tell me anything. I'm back in on the story, and any conspiracy people want to offer, I'm open to it.
Good job, John Ossoff, for raising this important issue and giving it greater salience. This is how you move the needle on news. Does anybody want to talk about the WNBA? Are we not going to talk about it?
I don't. You tell me. I want to just say I'm so like Enes Kanter. Me and Bill did this. So I'm just going to say it really brief. I knew Enes. I know Enes Kanter a little bit because he was
from
like
Turkish freedom fighter days, right?
Yeah, and so I was doing some work on some pro bono work for a group that was helping people that wrongfully imprisoned, and we were communicating about like ways to increase attention on all this. And so we used to text and hang out, and I guess Ben Rhodes had dinner with him. Turns out I didn't realize this. Ben Rhodes wrote about this week. I didn't realize that his relationship with Ennis was even deeper than mine. But like, so Ennis was like doing this like a normal activist type. And then his dad gets out of prison in Turkey, and I don't know if it's that, or he's Gulen, whatever. Or he gets just enamored with Trump. Something happens, and like he's gone fully Trump, and he's at this game. And it is funded by Trump. I haven't like seen this out there. Like it is, I was monitoring it on social media. America First Policy was sitting next to him. They were posting the pictures. They were posting the video. Like he's obviously on the payroll. And so just going back to the previous topic about how these guys are trying to distract it with anything, like everyone, like, you know, the most popular thing to say on social media these days is something is an op. Like this is an op. This is an op by the Trump orbit to get people to talk about this. And they're using Ennis Cantor as a vessel, and he's happy to be used by Trump in this propaganda campaign. And so it should just be discussed in that context. And also he's a whiny little, you know what? And like watching him, like, he's like walking out to the court with his hands up onto the baseline, like, come at me, bro. Like, and then complaining about getting kicked out. It's just like, it's so pathetic.
It is pathetic. But I would also just like to say that this is men in women's sports, what's happening right now. And this is men being like, I'm going to use women's sports as my own little playground for my hobby horse political things. But it's also weirdly like hypocritical of the right Fox News people, right? They have long argued that men who transition to women, that they are sort of, they're crazy people, they're lunatics, they are, you know, miscreants. So what are they celebrating Ennis suddenly identifying as a woman? Why is that? I understand that's because they see it as a troll, the troll that it is. I do think the NBA and the WNBA are going to need to just like draw some clear lines because their language is not super clear on this issue. They're basically like anybody who identifies as a woman.
What hasn't been an issue?
Like, right, it hasn't been an issue.
Thing that they're saying it's like, oh, well, why is it the WNBA have clear rules on this? Well, it's because it hasn't been an issue.
It has not come up.
Wait till it is an issue. Ennis can declare for the draft. Nobody will pick him.
Right. He was told he can't. Like they have said, they are keeping him out. And so,
yeah, great. I don't know. There's a silver lining on this since you brought it back up, which is we've had WNBA on in the house all week.
Yeah. Well, so learning I do,
all week.
I keep saying this. This is a we are Streisanding the WNBA into being. It's okay. Like very unfair to the players to all have to be in the middle of politics. But I think if they can kind of keep their heads down and ball, like this is a moment where they can capture the imaginations of the American people.
It's working in my house.
Yeah.
Love it. Guys, good show. Long show. Top 30% show.
You can stop ranking all the shows, JBL.
No, I can't. I can't and I won't. It was good to be with you guys. We will all be together. Hey, listen, tell us what you think about the Natalie Harp stuff. I would like to hear your conspiracy theories in the comments.
Me too.
No serious answers, please. I would like only...
I'm interested in serious conspiracy theories, actually. Okay.
But also, I want big points for creativity. Make me laugh. Make me laugh, people. We'll be back next week. Good luck, America.